What's up, everybody, and welcome to the Rideshare Rodeo Gig News and Interviews. I'm your host, Steve. Let's get it on. Welcome, everybody, to the Rideshare Rodeo Podcast, episode number 355. Let's go. All right, guys. First things first. On YouTube and on Twitter, on Mondays, I think it's 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific time, Mike Harubi and I, newjobsamerica.com, Be My Own Boss legislation, will be doing a 10 to 15 minute weekly topic that we will discuss regarding independent contractorship before the upcoming election. We have a hard stop time of 25 minutes. So this is what it means. Mike and I will come out every week on the two platforms. And I need to mention this on Twitter. A lot of people feel like they need to come to YouTube if they want to be part of the live and comment. That is, it used to be the case, but it's not anymore. You can now go to Twitter, and while we're live, you can comment, and we will see it in the studio where we are, just like we do the YouTube comments. So you guys who aren't aware that that is a thing, and if you're just not down with the YouTube thing, I get it. I've told you this before. I know a lot of audio podcast listeners aren't, and sometimes they feel like they would like to participate in these things, though. Well, not only that, but other streams that we run, like the Roundtable and, you know, other lives, I stream to my Twitter. So I needed to mention that today because I know a lot of you won't go to YouTube and you love the audio podcast, but I'm guessing many of you are on Twitter. I know some are, but I'm guessing even more maybe are, at least have a Twitter account. If you do, you can always watch the lives there and comment there as well. But we will be talking about one topic for 10 minutes. You know, we'll pick one different one a week. And Mike and I laid it out like we have a bunch already. And we'll kind of do this. Hopefully, you know, it's going to be every week, but there might be a week we have to miss or something due to our scheduling conflicts. But as far as we can see, we can make it work. Our backup day is Tuesday at the same time. So make sure to check that out because we want to, you know, after we do the 10 minutes, the other 15 minutes is there for questions, even if they're regarding the topic we talked about that day or anything independent contractorship related. So just be aware of that. And, we're going to do it every week leading up to the elections. I think it's important. So, and we're keeping the hard stop time at 25 minutes because that amount of time means anybody can listen to it. That's even a short drive. You can listen to that one. That's first thing. The next thing, let's move on to the two big stories I have this week. So first of all, and hopefully we'll get to this third one I have too, but Massachusetts is finally making, I follow this all the time. We talk about this a lot, but this is kind of what we've been waiting for. Yesterday, a bunch of news dropped about Massachusetts. This is one headline. There are many. Again, all news can be found by going to RideshareRodeo.com, clicking the menu, whether it be on a phone, a device, iPad, a tablet, a computer. On a computer, you'll see them across the top, the options. But on all the devices, you see the three lines. We're all familiar these days. Drop down the menu. The second option is gig news. That takes you to uberliftdrivers.com. But the Rideshare Rodeo page has all the podcasts, and it's just kind of the home base. So, I got articles up about the Massachusetts thing. So if you guys want to go check this, if you're listening and you want to check it after or whatever, I'll at least drop one article into the show notes of the podcast. There's a lot up on the website. But here's what's happening. So Massachusetts takes Uber Lyft to trial on whether drivers are employees. And the claim is that from Massachusetts, and this has been a big fight for a long time, is that they are. There's no question about it. So let's go a little bit through this article. It's from yesterday. All these articles on this dropped yesterday. I mean, the Massachusetts articles have been dropping for about 2 years, but the last few months, there's been some, but it was really heavy until like end of February, and then it kind of slowed a bit. And that's kind of what's happening with a lot of legislative states that are going to pass stuff, is they've quieted, but now they're getting loud again, because we knew coming into June, July, this is when things would happen. Some things have already gone, but here we go. So Massachusetts Attorney General took Uber Technologies and Lyft to trial on Monday over allegations that the rideshare companies are misclassifying thousands of drivers in the state as independent contractors to avoid treating them as more costly employees. The non-jury trial in Boston comes amid broader legal and political battles in the Democrat-led state. Also nationally, over the status of drivers for app-based companies whose service fuel the U.S. gig worker economy, Massachusetts Attorney General Andrea Joy Campbell, a Democrat, is asking a judge to conclude that drivers for Uber and Lyft are employees under state law and therefore entitled to benefits such as minimum wage, overtime, and earned sick time. By the way, make a note there, guys. We haven't seen overtime before. Even in Seattle or New York, we aren't seeing overtime. We've seen active time, which actually it means you're not even getting paid the true hourly. This is a lot different. So Assistant Attorney General Douglas Martland, in his opening statement, said the company's algorithm, pricing policies, and operating standards gave them a level of control over the drivers that belied any claim that they work independently. He said the drivers are given little time to decide whether to accept a ride request from a user, just 15 seconds, and are never told upfront how much riders will be paying them and the companies before letting them in their vehicle. So I need to pause here because I need to interject something. So we do know that Uber and Lyft are doing upfront pricing in a lot of markets to the drivers. Now, what's being said here is that it almost sounds like they're not doing upfront pricing anywhere. Well, they are, but he's getting into the fact that, yeah, well, even if there is upfront pricing to the driver, they're not seeing what they're making, what the company's making. That's for sure. We know that in no market, even with upfront pricing, is it showing what the driver will make and what the company will make. I'm a little confused why you would need to see that, because being an independent contractor, not what you're going to make. I'm all for that. I always have been. That's a big push of mine, is that we need to see all the details, complete transparency. But I'm a little confused why that transparency needs to carry over to the companies. Because the companies, I understand that they keep raising the prices and, you know, potentially that could affect the drivers, but I've always said that if it's complete transparency, you can't get mad, because listen, if they're showing you everything, you're here, you're going to pick up here, you're going to drop off here, and you can look at a map and you see you're 3 miles away from the pickup or a mile away from the pickup, and you see it's going 15 miles where it's going from and to, and you see right there what the price is that they're willing to pay you. As long as they're not holding it against you to not take it, then that's all we can ask of these platforms. So I am a little thrown on why we would need to see what the companies are paid to. I do believe that the customers, maybe not the drivers, because the drivers, again, it is company business. So, the companies do have to show the drivers complete transparency. There needs to be some form of that. We need to get there. But I don't understand why the drivers need to see what the company's earning. I guess it's in case they're like mega surging or something, and they're still just paying the same flat fee, whatever it might be. One thing I do strongly believe in is that we all these companies need to show the customer, because the customer knows one thing for sure: what they paid. That's all. What's the bottom line? What did we pay? This much. Okay, so you spent $80. I am all for a complete breakdown of that $80 for the customer. I mean, back in the days of taxi dispatch and, you know, pre-apps and all this kind of stuff, and even like pre-computer, if you want to go back a ways, you know, you couldn't get all that. But now that we do live in that age, it's available. So it should, I mean, transparency to a customer should absolutely be there. They should see, okay, yeah, I know I paid 80. Let's see it. See what the company made. See the airport fee, if there was one. See the taxes. See the fees. See the service fee. See this fee. See what the drivers made. They should absolutely see that, because that could lead to the companies using better ethical treatment. Could it not? I mean, that's just my opinion. I feel like that could lead to a lot of better ethical treatment, though. Because that we already know a lot of riders are already getting turned on to the fact that, you know, like, hey, I've talked to drivers now and I know they don't get paid a lot. See, back in the day, and I know a lot of you who are veterans like me going back to 2015 will remember this. Back in the day, you could have, I mean, not in 2015 because we made great money. But if you're doing rideshare these days, even, you know, let's go just pre-pandemic. You know, you could have told a passenger, you know, I only get $8 for this ride and they paid 80 or whatever. You know, I only get 25 and they paid 70. Let's keep it like 50, just to be fair. I only get 25. A lot of customers might have gone, really? Come on, dude. You're just trying to squeeze a tip out of me. But we are finally at a point where people are hearing it so often from the drivers, how much they make. So if you're a driver that doesn't inform your customer, you know, I'm not saying you need to inform every customer. Some drivers that I know only do rides that are 1 mile long, stay downtown, and only take people a couple blocks. Obviously, you don't need to have that discussion. But like, if I were to get a customer in my car going to the airport and it's a 20-30 minute drive, most likely, unless they, you know, unless they're on a business call or they're on their device and they're working, if they engage into conversation with me, at some point, most likely, I would say something, and always have. I would say, you know, well, I mean, you are aware that the drivers don't get the whole amount, clearly, but are you aware of how that breakdown? I mean, it's always different. You got to play it off the person you have in the car. But I would say, you know, you don't need to shout it out. You don't need to, like, you know, scream at somebody. But if you are engaged in a conversation with a rider, feel free to tell them what you are making, you know, because... Again, don't think they're going to think you're squeezing them for a tip these days. Those days are gone. Actually, they're very interested to know. So that said, let's get back to it. What entrepreneur would do that? And they're asking, now we're back to the point about giving them 15 seconds to decide, never told up front how much riders will be paying them and the companies. So what entrepreneur would do that? Martland asked Suffolk County Superior Court Judge Peter Krupp, excuse me, I'm laughing at myself, guys, who will decide the case. Lawyers for the companies argued the state misunderstood their business, saying the main employees on their payroll were data scientists and others who fine-tune the apps they provide that connect independent drivers with potential riders. Lyft, this is a quote, Lyft works for drivers, not the other way around, said Felicia Ellsworth, who's Lyft's lawyer. Uber counsel Michael Marriott argued that drivers value the flexibility of being able to drive when they want, allowing them to tailor their work around children, other jobs, appointments, and provide services only part-time. The flexibility is critical for them, she said. These drivers don't need to show up at all, much less at specific time, like employees do. She and Ellsworth warned that a ruling requiring the companies to treat the state's 55,000 Uber drivers and 35,000 Lyft drivers as employees would force them to cut or halt operations in Massachusetts. The case went to trial a week after Massachusetts' highest court heard arguments over whether to allow an industry-backed ballot measure to go before voters in this upcoming November election that defines the drivers as contractors but entitles them to some new benefits. The court appeared open to allowing some version of the proposal to go on the ballot with a rival labor-backed ballot measure that seeks to allow drivers to unionize. Make sure, I know my audio podcast people, I know you guys know this, but even just usually they beat her. I need to tip this off because usually they beat around the bush and they do not use that word lightly. They do not use the word unionize. They use words like, to collectively bargain or this, which are the same thing, but they're straight up saying, which allows them to unionize. So we are now, if you're not already catching on, you should be. They're talking about W-2, straight up, no way around it. The lawsuit at issue in Monday's trial was filed in 2020 by Campbell's predecessor, Maura Healey. By the way, Maura is... Maura Healey moved on from attorney general to the governor of Massachusetts. And she was the one that really did start all this push. So should the state prevail, it has said the companies could face larger penalties for not properly classifying their drivers. Should Uber and Lyft lose the trial but succeed at the ballot box, Campbell's office said, the ballot measure would only govern the company's conduct moving forward and that they could face large penalties for past misclassifications. By not classifying their Massachusetts drivers as employees, Uber and Lyft are avoiding paying $266.4 million into workers' compensation, unemployment insurance, and paid family leave over 10 years, according to a report by the state auditor. Okay, so I want to talk about this a little bit from my perspective. There's some good points made in this. You know, I mean, yes, Uber and Lyft are avoiding paying $266.4 million into workers' compensation, unemployment insurance, and paid family leave. And by all of this, clearly, we're all on the same page now. We are talking about the first state to straight up go, you guys are W-2 workers. Other states have beat around the bush, attempted, and then kind of resolved. They're saying you're, it's not even a question. You're a W-2 worker. Shout out to Real Talk with Roy, because he knows. What up, Roy? I gotta say, dude, my boy has been saying this for a long time. And while I'm a traditional independent contractor, I can see where this is coming from. I do think there is a solution. I do think that if this company started just go, look, if it just became the dispatch company that it is nothing more than a digital dispatch, just like the food apps and most of them. Some are logistical, like the Last Mile Space apps that I do. Those are logistical. And those are very straightforward. They're very transparent. So that's a whole different, that's why you don't see them in these lawsuits, because when they break them apart, you can actually look at those apps and say, yes, these people are independent contractors. You don't have an acceptance rate. You are showing them all the details and there's no harm, no foul. If they don't take it, you just have offers for them. So, and they track and they do things and, you know, they basically they're getting customers great service. The works. So if you're doing it right, the last mile space is proof that if you're doing it right, you're not going to face all these problems. So I don't know what it is with these companies that they are just so dead set on just not being transparent. Because now I can honestly say that, I mean, it's, we've talked about it, but now there's enough backing to say that, listen, if you're completely transparent and you don't hold anything against these drivers, whether they take it or not, cool. You know, like when I started with Uber, there was an 80-20 split, 80 to me, 20 to them. We know from many studies that it's 50-50 now, if not sometimes higher to the Uber or Lyft side and lower to the driver, which is ridiculous. To me, like, go to a 20%, which is pretty high for what they're doing. You know, go to a 20, maybe even 25 if you have to say running the company, and if you can truly provide enough information, you know, 75, 25, 80, 20, something like that, and use that with the customers too. Use a static amount that you take off every ride. Then they wouldn't have trouble producing receipts. They wouldn't have trouble showing a breakdown with these receipts. And they wouldn't be facing every state about to lay down legislation. I just don't get it. I mean, I got it when they were private companies before they went public. You know, it didn't make sense. They needed to overpopulate. You got to have three times as many drivers as passengers. Otherwise, you can't grow the passengers. It's the chicken and the egg, baby. You know, so it's, I get it, but we're long past that now. I mean, nobody's unaware. Nobody in the world is unaware of the word Uber. And not just the word. I mean, it's now, I think, in many dictionaries, you can find the word Uber now. So it's a term. So listen, and I don't mean like the old, you know, like the German version Uber. It's like, or other countries that use that word. But I'm talking about like Uber is now, oh yeah. Like if you're calling for a Lyft, let's say you only use Lyft. You know, often people that I know, it's funny because I'll be out with people and I'll see them. You know, we're all kind of like leaving late nights from somewhere, you know, or, you know, I'm working somewhere or whatever, and somebody's calling, and I see them and I know the person, and they pull out their phone, they open Lyft, and they're like, I'm like, what are you doing? They're like, calling an Uber. It's funny because these are people who I know who don't even have the Uber app, but yet rideshare is just referred to as calling an Uber. I'm sure there are some, but very few people say, oh, I'm calling a Lyft. It's just maybe in just my perspective, but anyway, back to it. At this point, nobody's unfamiliar with the term. I don't understand why they don't just come straight forward and say, you know, listen, like we're going to take 20 to 25%, whichever the, you know, whichever, pick one, and the driver gets the rest. And, you know, if there's extra fees taxed on, just tax them on top of the 100%. Like if there is a true airport fee, not one that they're charging you and hiding in the fees, but one that is charged to them every time they come through, that's fine. Just line item it for the customer. Still give the customer a bid, include the airport fee, but minus the airport fee, out of that rest of the amount, you know, split it 80-20 or 75-25. I'm, you know, nothing's as simple as I can make it sound, but here I think we are starting to get to something more simplistic, and it's almost like, I mean, man, it's almost conspiracy theory stuff on why they wouldn't at this point. It's not hidden. Barely anybody's not aware of this. And especially with rideshare, I mean, the delivery platforms are starting to be exposed as well too. You know, I mean, DoorDash in specific is just getting slammed, for their lack of anything positive, really. I mean, I don't even know where to end that. But I will put the link to this article in there, you guys. The other thing, so when is the last day? I need to see here. Oh boy. Minneapolis rideshare controversy shows growing power of progressive Democrats. So let me pull this up for a little bit. Not sure we'll go through the whole thing. I'll try and put this link in too, because it's a little long, but I at least want to get into maybe a part of this. So let's just kind of move along and see what happens here. As Uber and Lyft threaten to leave Minneapolis, or possibly the whole state, the debate has shown the power of progressive legislators and city council members. Even as a more centrist government or governor and mayor take a harder point on this, okay? Minneapolis Mayor Jacob Frey and Governor Tim Walz's administration are searching for compromise with the rideshare companies, but their fellow DFLers, I'm guessing that's I don't even know, Democrat something leadership, I don't know, the city council and legislature are pushing for a driver pay raise that Uber and Lyft oppose. The debate has highlighted the growing influence of progressives who lean further left than traditional Minnesota Democrats. They are casting the issue as a workers' rights battle. In a state with a one vote DFL majority, I wish, you know, usually in an, I got to pause, guys, usually in an article, they in the first time when you use these terminologies, even though I probably should know this because I've seen it before, you usually like say what it is and then you kind of put it in, you know, and then you put DFL so that hereafter we're going to refer to it as this, so we don't have to write the whole thing up. Anyway, so let's start that paragraph over. In a state senate with one vote DFL majority, one senator has enormous leverage, and caucus leaders try to keep members in lockup for another week. In Minneapolis City Hall, the addition of two progressive council members in November changed the balance of power. Progressive leaders are feeling their influence. I think the caucus is united, said Senator Omar, who is carrying the bill in the Senate. But the governor's administration has signaled it is not comfortable with the pay rates in the bill, making its fate unclear. Walz vetoed, Walz vetoed a driver pay minimum last year and vowed it would be his top priority. And we've talked about that many times when Governor Walz vetoed it after the entire city council passed it. Republicans in the DFL-controlled House have limited leverage. In the narrow margin Senate, it's less clear. One GOP senator, Jim Abeler, has been involved in the talks, explaining he wants to try to keep the companies from leaving. The compromise, because they're not employees, drivers aren't subject to any minimum wage requirements. The state commissioned analysis concluded Minnesota drivers often earn below the equivalent of minimum wage after expenses. We've talked about this many times as well. We know that, you know, look, guys, I mean, like most people that go out and start a business, this is just what it is. Most businesses fail, you know, so I'm not saying anybody in the gig economy is going to fail. I'm just saying, understand that most businesses fail. You know, most businesses when they start, and there's all kinds of different theories behind this, but like one I like to use is that, you know, when you start a business, understand you need to have the money to start it. You need to have operating capital and go in with the notion that you will not make a profit for 3 years, nor will you be able to cut yourself a paycheck. So it's usually like a very common thing when you're starting a business to say, okay, do I have enough money to start it? Do I have enough operating capital? And can I not afford to take a salary for 3 years and all that? So, I mean, with gig apps, no, we couldn't. I mean, we all need it every day, what we earn. and it's being fed to us. So it is a different thing. This is why I always say hybrids. But over the summer, the governor ordered the Department of Labor and Industry to commission a study to estimate what pay rates would be necessary to approximate the Minneapolis minimum wage rates be necessary. Hold on. After expenses. Why am I seeing this wrong? Let me see. Sorry, guys, I lost my place here. My dog's chewing on himself. Bodie. No. My brain was just totally sidetracked. I don't know why he's chewing on his foot. I'll have to look after. Over the summer, the governor ordered the Department of Labor and Industry to commission a study to estimate what pay rates would be necessary to approximate the Minneapolis minimum wage after driver's expenses. That study recommended rates of 49 cents per minute and either 89 cents or $1.21 per mile, with a higher rate providing more benefits for drivers. The Minneapolis City Council passed a higher pay rate, 51 cents per minute and $1.40 per mile. But on May 6, progressive leaders of the city council announced a compromise rate with the leadership in the legislation. A self-described Democrat socialist aligned with the majority on the city council. They could come down to $1.27 per mile and 49 cents per minute. That is what we've seen. So we're talking about now like $1.76 instead of the $1.91, but they're now talking about having that be statewide instead of just Minneapolis and St. Paul, and then the rest of the rural of the state was going to be a different rate. Now they're talking about making that, what they're saying here, the $1.27 and the 49 cents, be statewide, which actually would make it even harder on the Twin Cities because it actually would balance it out to be what they first wanted. So there's no compromise there, to be honest. But that, what they call a compromise, but that compromise did not include Waltz or his administration or either of the rideshare companies. Waltz called it a step in the right direction, and Labor Commissioner has sounded cautious notes in recent hearings. The administration remains committed to engaging with stakeholders and the authors, she said, to build agreements on a pay standard supported by the study and data that ensures drivers are paid fairly and will keep these important services available to the citizens of Minnesota. That further does not see the companies as willing to compromise, even to lower to the lower of the two rates. Again, that lower of the two rates isn't, I need to keep saying this because it, you know, in Minneapolis, St. Paul, there were going to be two different rates, but they kind of balanced at about $1.91. But the rest of the state was going to be a lot less. So when you say now, okay, for a mile in a minute, you know, we're going to do $1.76. There's our compromise, but it's going to be statewide. The problem there is you're pretty much still most, I mean, 90 plus percent of the rideshare volume comes from the Twin Cities. So you're now back at really $1.91 when you're going across the state now. After the compromise was released, both companies said it would be unworkable. Lyft said they would double fares, and one of Uber's representatives suggested 68 cents per mile. The politics inside Minneapolis City Hall, where no elected Republicans serve, are easy to break down. The further left is more powerful than the relatively moderate left. That includes Frey. Last year, Frey vetoed a similar rideshare ordinance, and an attempt to override that veto failed. But November's city election resulted in a slight shift on the left with the election of two new council members. And that coalition brought the driver pay hike back this year. When Frey vetoed it, it was overridden. As such, despite the mayor and his appointees being the official voice of the city at the legislature, he's been all but iced out of the recent talks. Instead, it's been a small group of city council leaders in the room negotiating with DFL leaders in the legislature. The rideshare sector is just one place progressives are flexing their muscle. In Minneapolis, they've overridden Frey's veto of a contentious resolution on the Israel-Hamas war and are drafting more permissive policies for homeless encampments, among other initiatives. The legislators, progressives, have so far had less of an impact. With leadership conscious of the razor-thin margins and moderate members who may not always be on board with their colleagues further to the left. But because DFL majorities can't afford to lose any votes, progressives have chipped away at the edges on issues like sales tax and zoning. The compromise has been skeptical that Uber and Lyft will follow through on their threats to leave, or rates in a bill now moving through the legislature would even force them to operate at a loss. House Majority Leader Jamie Long said the rates are consistent with what Uber and Lyft pay drivers in Washington State, not just in Seattle. But in smaller cities, they've been able to stay and operate profitably. Now, I got to pause there and say, you know, the comparison to use Seattle, it seems like it's a little late for that because Seattle isn't working too well. We know that because they've, again, you can pass these along, but the companies in a free trade society, the companies are allowed to jack up the prices then. And what, when we, and I talk about this all the time, so this isn't going to be new to you, but I need to put it out there again. Every time one of these happens, and I'm not saying that there isn't a solution somewhere in here. I just don't think forcing this down their throat is, because every time something like this does go through, they just raise the prices on the customers. So there's a big problem there. There's a big issue. And, you know, hopefully they'll come to some resolution. But let's continue. We're almost through here. Whether the legislator and Waltz agree to pay any minimum, Uber and Lyft appear poised to leave unless the minimum falls significantly. The compromise figure is $1.27 per mile, and Uber pitched 68 cents per mile. So the $1.27 is down from their $1.40, but that's where the city council said they'll compromise on the per mile, and Uber pitched, no, we'll do 68 cents. So to me, I'm very concerned because I don't think they're even negotiating. I mean, it's not like they're saying $1.27 and Uber's saying $1.15. That would lead me to believe there's true negotiations. But when you're talking about Uber saying half as much as what they're saying, I don't feel like they're really compromising, and neither do Uber and Lyft. But even if a number emerges that's acceptable to the companies, there is no appetite among DFL leaders to force it on Minneapolis. The one idea that has widespread Republican support. As of this past week, there seemed to be a little inclination among city council members to compromise more. Leary and the companies claimed new rideshare operations preparing to enter the market. Again, I got to pause. They're talking about a lot of ride. We've seen this in Austin. This happened in Austin. We know this doesn't work. It doesn't work. It just doesn't work. I don't know else to say, guys. It just doesn't work. I mean, Austin did the same thing, and they told Uber and Lyft to get out. And they had three companies that were rideshare companies who were already operating in Austin. This is a different scenario where they're talking about, hey, these companies will come in. First of all, the companies coming in don't have the database to do this, and it's very tough. But In Austin, when they did it, they already had three operational, and they still, the companies that were the littler companies did worse without Uber and Lyft there. So the company ended up, or Austin ended up begging Uber and Lyft to come back. And I'm not, again, I'm not saying I have the solution. I don't. I just don't believe in these, because when you do this, it just does get passed to the customers. Though the legislative session is set to end May 20th, okay, that's next Monday. That's next week Monday, 6 days from today. The true deadline will be July 1st, the effective date of the Minneapolis ordinance and the date both companies have said they'll cease operations in the entire state of Minnesota. Now, who believes they really will? I do, because they did in Austin. This is exactly what happened in Austin, and they did cease operations. So, you know, what's going on here? So we already knew that May 1st was the deadline, hard deadline. No way we're going to change it. And you guys, Uber and Lyft, you better get in line with these numbers or else, or you're going to have to get in line with them. And Uber and Lyft said, we'll leave. The date approached. They said July 1st. Uber and Lyft said, okay, we'll leave July 1st then. I mean, I don't think that they're playing a game of chicken here. I think that they're very serious, and I think that Austin was proof of it. You know, so it's scary to me that the legislative session ends in 6 days, because if you guys go to any, I mean, it doesn't even have to be gig related topics, but if you go look, when things are this far apart in negotiations and you have 6 days left in a session, it takes next to a miracle to get anything where you can compromise. So my guess is the legislation session will end and the July 1st date will be still stamped out there, and Uber and Lyft are literally preparing to leave. So MOOV, I think it is, and a couple others are coming in, but like MOOV has a, you know, it's basically a rideshare from Africa, but they do a per day or a per month fee to be on the platform as a driver. Not a big fan of those. I know that some haven't been scams, but like Trip. Spelled TRYP. If you guys remember that, Trip was a complete scam. It was a pyramid scheme. Bring in other people, you'll get this, that, and the other. You pay this number per month to be on the platform as a driver, and we'll get you a ton of rides, and you keep 90% of it or nine, whatever, keep 100% of it. Now, again, there are other ones that I have not investigated hard enough, but I know for certain with Trip, they were a pyramid scheme. Luckily, they are no longer around, so you guys won't have to worry about Trip. But what drivers on Trip did find fairly quickly was that, well, there's a decent amount of drivers on Trip, and there's no passengers. Now, by no, I don't mean that they didn't have any, but, you know, there were, let me put it this way, I think there were more drivers than passengers. So it's like, let's just keep the number simple. If you have 10 drivers and two passengers, well, I mean, now multiply it. And the pyramid way it worked was to bring in more drivers, because you need to have more drivers before you have customers so that those customers can get rides quickly. Otherwise you will fail in this space. But the problem is that I don't even think, I think Trip even knew there's no way we can attain that kind of status. So with that said, I'm not really sure what to say. I'm like, it's a little embarrassing to be honest. But I think that even Minneapolis knows it cannot get by with these other companies that it doesn't. Most of the articles coming out these days aren't even mentioning the companies. About a month ago, they were all like, hey, this company, look at all the companies coming here. We're going to be fine without Uber and Lyft. Now you're not really hearing about them. They're still going to Minneapolis if need be, but I'm not sure any of them are set up to go there unless Uber and Lyft leave. Maybe they are. But as far as I can tell, I'm not seeing them in the news much anymore. And it just seems to be both sides, Uber and Lyft. Hey, we'd love to stay, but you got to keep it in a workable number for us. And then the other side is you're gonna pay your drivers this much, period. And they're like, no, if that's the case, we'll leave. Calling Uber and Lyft's bluff is a very stupid thing. Again, I'm not siding with them. I think in Minnesota, I think it's a very good example of both sides being completely wrong. I am not an extreme left or an extreme right person. I like to be in the middle, and I also like to vote on candidates and things like that. But Minnesota's city council is extreme left. And so you got extreme left and you got a corporation and you got a couple corporations. Of course, they're not going to find middle ground. I mean, I don't even know how you would find middle ground. You guys are not. I mean, it's like people who are completely opposite of each other and almost don't even want to get along. So, you know, will this problem be solved? We've talked about it a few times. I don't know. But if they don't have a solution by next week's podcast, next week when you guys are here listening to the podcast, we won't spend a ton of time on it unless something crazy happens. But I'll announce what happened. I mean, we'll go through it real quickly in the beginning, probably. Just real quickly, you know, like, did they agree to something before city council shut down for session? Because the session won't restart until after the July 1st date. That's the other problem. So if they go into the off term right now, next Monday after that meeting, July 1st will come before the first session of the next legislation. So it's either by Monday or that July date will come. And if that July date comes, do they just kick it further down the road? Does it become August 1st or September 1st? What do you guys think? You know, I'm always curious to know what you guys think. And if you want to, always email me, steve@rideshare.com. If you feel like you just don't feel like typing it all out into comments on any platform or whatever, I will respond, obviously, to any I see on all platforms. But if you feel like typing it out in an email instead, I'm fine with that too. Some of you guys email me some really great stuff, and some of you guys make me read a lot. And so thank you for challenging me. I do appreciate it. The last thing I wanted to hit on here, you guys, this trifecta, whatever, this craziness going on in the grocery space. So we know that the food delivery, Uber Eats, DoorDash, Grubhub, we know the volume's tremendously dying off, and we always knew it would. We knew pandemic times wouldn't stay around forever. People are getting out more. People are understanding, man, I don't want to spend twice as much, even for like a McDonald's order or anything. I can just go get it myself. Whether a lot of people these days, some don't even, there's more people without cars than used to be. But even that excuse, like a lot of people can just walk or whatever, or get other delivery services that are free. So people are starting to explore other options. But the grocery space is still very strong. Kroger here where I am, which is King Soopers in Colorado, but it's owned by Kroger. Same thing with City Market is owned by Kroger here in Colorado. But there's 26-foot refrigeration trucks traveling around everywhere using in-store prices and delivering for $7 within 4 hours, $5 within an hour. And you get in-store prices. You can use digital coupons, paper coupons. You can get your gas points. But DoorDash has been trying to get into this space of the grocery space. Uber has been in it and they bought Corner Shop. They're doing fairly well in South and Central America, but they don't really got it here in the country. In fact, if just between the two, Uber and DoorDash, I'd say DoorDash is doing a much better job getting customers for shopping. But Uber last week teamed up with Instacart. So, you know, here comes the 500-pound gorilla and the maple bear. Uber and Instacart. Through the Instacart app now, you will be able to get your groceries, and through a tab, if you decide, hey, you know what, here's the groceries I need, but tonight I don't feel like cooking, I want to get delivery too. You can touch Uber and you can get through Uber Eats through the Instacart app. So I'm sure there's a deal between them, because this would only, what I just laid out, unless there's money going to Instacart, would only benefit Uber because they're getting the delivery part of it for free. Also, we know this is, I'm just going to point it out because a lot of you probably already are guessing this, but as we know, this is how Uber slowly takes over a company, because they'll, if you're thinking, well, yeah, Instacart has the groceries, Uber has the food delivery. That makes sense. We've seen a lot of instances where this happens, these kind of partnerships. And next thing you know, in 3, 4, 5, 6 months, we hear that Uber will be buying Instacart. So is this that attempt? I am not sure. But here's the thing. We haven't even talked about the two biggest players yet in this year and moving forward. One of them is Walmart. Walmart Spark is totally changing, which I'm glad about, because Walmart Spark seems to have the worst illegal account issue going on. Definitely the most migrant illegal account issue going on in the country. To the point where most anybody doing Spark, doesn't even matter where you live, has not only are you noticing it, but you've stopped even doing it because it's that bad. That's a whole different other story. But Spark is out there, and they're revamping how they're going to do things. But Spark will always have their Walmart customers, so that, you know, they're going to do okay. DoorDash versus Uber, I would say DoorDash wins. DoorDash versus Uber and Instacart, I would say Uber and Instacart win. Especially because Uber's global, so they can take a loss and really almost give it away for a while to grow something because they're global. DoorDash is only here and in Canada. And in Australia, but Uber's everywhere in the planet. So they have a lot more money to do that with. But the biggest person in the room right now is, you guessed it, Amazon. Amazon has had Fresh for a while, and it only delivers Whole Foods. Well, Amazon will now be offering $99 a year for unlimited deliveries for free in-store prices. Not just Whole Foods. It will now include all the grocery stores in your state. Free delivery, and there's no tipping because it's almost like Flex, Amazon Flex. So it's just like buying something on Amazon. You will see the price of your groceries. You don't have to tip. Not only that, you can't tip. And I think that's going to appeal to a ton of people who have tipping fatigue right now. And that is a very real thing. As much as I don't like that word, it's very real. But Amazon's in the game now, and they're going to do all the stores. $99 a year, in-store prices, full receipts. You're going to get shown everything. You're going to pay what you pay at the store. It's going to be delivered to you. The only thing is the order has to be over $35. That's it. And now the last comment I want to make. Oddly, when Uber paired with Instacart, they now have a plan of, if you're an Instacart member, you will get free delivery on orders of $35 or more. To me, that's a sign of major desperation, especially during a partnership of Uber and Instacart, because if they're trying to match that $35, that's just to appeal for advertising. Hey, we're the same minimum rate as Amazon. Problem is, Instacart, Uber, DoorDash, they all upcharge markup every item in the store. So even if they say you're getting your delivery for free, when you look at it, it won't be if you compare it to an Amazon order, because an Amazon order will be the same as what you'd pay in the store. An Instacart order will be 140% of what you'd pay in the store, approximately. That's a big difference. And that's also the end of the week, guys. Thank you for joining me. Join us back here on the Rideshare Rodeo podcast next week. And until then, be safe, earn smart, be good to each other. Peace, everybody. I'm a man, I'm a man.